Blog Talk Radio.
Be loved in return.
very far over many lands and seas. He was very shy, and there was so much sadness in his eyes. But there
charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see
you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something good in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing on. Every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring with the harmony. Oh, let our rejoicing rise high. South has Georgia.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our home ownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as $20 a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
In a time when the strategy of Jim Crowism was to dehumanize and discredit those who were different from what was considered the mainstream of America, Dr. Woodson stood up and subsequently changed the course of history.
Dr. Woodson started the association in 1915 at the height of the ascendancy of the Ku Klux Klan. When lynchings were rampant in the United States of America, when racism was part and parcel of American ideology.
Well, of course, there were the obstacles of bigotry and of racism and of denial. Large numbers of white Americans simply could not believe that African Americans had made anything, that contributions.
Carter G. Woodson was born on December 19, 1875 in Buckingham County, Virginia. He was the son of former slaves James Henry and Eliza Riddle Woodson. He was the youngest of nine children and had to work on the farm rather than attend school.
Let me show you the man who managed to get a Ph.D. from Harvard, only the second man after W.B. Du Bois, who was denied his own education and didn't get formal education until he was 20 years old. He was a remarkable human being, an extraordinary intellect.
And so he sought in every way possible to represent African Americans as people who had made enormous, significant contributions to the development of this country.
However, Dr. Woodson was determined to get an education, and at age 17 he moved to Huntington, West Virginia, and at age 20 he was finally able to enter Douglas High School. In less than 2 years, he graduated and went on to enroll at Berea College and also served as principal of his old high school. After earning his degree from Berea College, he then journeyed to the Philippines and taught from 1903 to 1907. While in the Philippines, he took numerous correspondence courses from the University of Chicago, which prepared him for study in Paris at the Sorbonne. Upon returning to the United States, he entered the University of Chicago and earned a bachelor and master's degree in history and Romance languages in 1908. During the time that Dr. Woodson taught at Dunbar High School in Washington, D.C., he became convinced that something needed to be done about the history of African Americans. African Americans were either being ignored or misrepresented, and Carter G. Woodson was not going to allow that to continue. In 1915, the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History was founded. It was created to promote and preserve African American history and culture. He also founded the Journal of Negro History in 1916 as a tool to get information to the masses. He knew that his research would not be widely distributed in a segregated America, so he took care of that himself. In 1917, Dr. Woodson wrote his first book, The Education of the Negro Prior to 1861. This piece is considered his most important contribution. Because of the difficulty he had in publishing his works, Dr. Woodson founded the Associated Publishers in 1921 to publish books and other information about black life and history. He ultimately wrote or co-wrote 22 books, among them The Negro in Our History and The Miseducation of the Negro. In 1926, Dr. Woodson founded what was called the Negro History Week. It was to expand awareness of the contributions of African Americans to our society and to instill pride in the hearts of black men, women, and children, a celebration that has grown into Black History Month and is embraced and celebrated as a part of the American fabric.
He also launched in 1926 Negro History Week, and he hoped that at least for a week, Americans would, of every stripe, Americans of black and white and brown and gray and whatever, would recognize the fact that African Americans were truly Americans, and that this country owed African Americans a great debt for what they had done to make this country what it is today.
Think of the worst things people can say about your culture, about your race, about your religion, about your people. Are they true? Could it be that you're not as smart, or you're money hungry, or you're a drunk, or you're cold and calculating? Of course not. You're an individual. Chances are your culture has made contributions in a masterful way to cultures throughout the world. But the more the bigots say it, the more it seems true. The more these stereotypes are hoisted upon the cultural landscape, the more people look at blacks and Jews, Muslims, Catholics, Native Americans, Asians, and Hispanics with wary eyes wondering if the demonizing insults are true. How in the world can you believe in yourself if those around you believe you're a lesser life form? Dr. Carter G. Woodson had an answer for that. That answer is knowledge.
What, you may ask, is so important about studying history? The answer is as simple as it is important. If you knew your culture's history was directly linked to great writers, powerful leaders, successful business people and pioneers, wouldn't that make you proud? Wouldn't that inspire you to do great things yourself? Those who endeavor to understand their own history are paving a path toward a bright future. Carter G. Woodson, the father of black history, knew that knowledge of the African American experience would be the last way to destroy the chains of slavery. And so he made it his life's passion. In early 20th century America, it was popularly accepted that blacks in Africa had contributed nothing to world civilization, that slavery actually benefited those Africans who had the good fortune to be caught up in the slave trades.
It was damaging African Americans because they too were being exposed to these ideas and accepted them as truth, and it had a damaging effect on their self-esteem and their belief in their themselves to be able to go on and educate and contribute to the world.
Those kinds of distortions not only permeated the world of white Americans, but sunk deeply into the souls of African Americans. If one was to believe these lies about his own people, then how could he achieve the confidence to break the mold? In 19 books and dozens of published articles, Carter G. Woodson worked to erase that false history and began to help all Americans of all cultures to understand the true history of the African people's experience in America and across the world.
When you think of black people as inferior, it would only make sense, this argument that they had done nothing to contribute to the world. So he's going to point out all of those fallacies and really try to give the black community a rallying point around which to push their efforts, that we really needed to do something to make people aware, not just black people, but white people, about all of the contributions that people of African descent, both on the continent of Africa and also in this country, have made to the world and to the United States of America.
He believed that hard facts, through research and fair-mindedness, would bring balance to history, and that his thesis was that all peoples in the world had made a contribution to civilization. And once that people on a mass scale understood this, there would be greater respect for all races, all ethnic groups, all religions.
Before Carter Woodson began publishing his own writing and those of contemporary historians, there were few media outlets that would shed light on the full story of African and African American achievements in the United States. He made sure Americans heard a different side of the story. In 1926, Woodson founded Negro History Week, which later evolved into Black History Month. To this day, the occasion continues to remind all Americans of the great accomplishments of writers, entrepreneurs, civil rights leaders, artists, and educators who helped create modern America. Woodson also founded what is now called the Study of African American Life and History, founded in 1915. This is the agency that decides on the theme for Black History Month each year. This legacy is still helping to inspire new generations of young people with true stories of outstanding achievements by Americans of African descent.
No person can imagine where he's going unless he knows where he's been.
The more I learn as I've continued to educate myself and to study about people like James Lafayette, like Anthony Johnson, like Maggie Walker, it's an absolute inspiration to me. Because not only did they look like me, but because here you have an individual with enough character, enough strength, enough skill, that living in some very difficult times, they were able to use what they had. No excuses, no pity parties, but use what they had to advance their cause and take not only themselves but other people to another level.
Across our country today, African Americans have overcome terrible lies and stereotypes to achieve great success. Carter Woodson inspired each of these people to understand the success that has been achieved by pioneers of their culture and the contributions they have made and are now making to our nation.
Southern agriculture. He turned soybeans into plastic and carved his place in history. An orphan slave set free with a microscope and a vision. Now, George Washington Carver Tech on Modern Marvels. What do biodiesel fuel and peanut butter have in common? How are crayons and space travel connected? What are soybeans doing in our automobiles? These marvels can all be traced back to the inventive mind of a man who was born a slave, but emerged a master of scientific discovery.
He was able to just look around him and see the raw materials and then see the human need that was out there and bring the two together. And so my own personal view of Carver is that he was a master integrator.
Carver had the most remarkable heart. And that's the thing I think I love the most about his life. I mean, as tremendous of a scientist as he was, he coming out with so many useful products that even today, I don't even know what we would do without, his heart was the best.
Dr. George Washington Carver is well known throughout the world for his revolutionary research, particularly with a peanut. In the early 1900s, he discovered and developed more than 300 new uses for the legume in food products and industrial applications, from face cream to a cure for dandruff, from linoleum flooring to motor oil. Carver saw infinite possibilities in the peanut plant.
He literally inspired other researchers all across this country to take a deeper look at this plant. And of course, I believe that the end of the line has not been reached on what he uncovered.
But Carver's legacy goes far beyond his accomplishments with what was called at the time the lowly goober. He toiled for more than 40 years in his laboratory at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, and is credited with countless breakthroughs in agricultural research.
The impact of that was just astonishing. Carver, through the kind of research he did, was able to really lead the revitalization, really, of a whole region, the southern region.
He really is one of the great American heroes. If there's anyone you're going to learn about, you should learn about, you know, Carver would be one of those people.
George Carver was born into slavery in 1864 in Diamond Grove, Missouri. He was the property of Moses Carver. Towards the end of the Civil War, Southern bushwhackers raided the Carver's farm and kidnapped baby George and his mother.
Moses Carver hired a Union scout named John Bentley to trace after them and try to recover his property. Bentley was able to find baby George, and the mother Mary was never seen again. We do not know what happened.
George was near death when he was found. Moses and his wife took care of him like he was their own child. Too frail to work in the fields, he helped out with the household chores.
It was on this farm that he had spare time to go out and wander in the woods and enjoy nature and become very close to nature. He would look at a briar, he would look at the soil, he would look at the different leaf patterns and question and wonder and ask, why? Why are things like this?
George was inspired to paint after visiting a neighbor's home and seeing works of art for the first time.
So he came back, created his own brushes with twigs, and he would take nature's berries and grasses and create colors, an array of colors, and begin to paint.
Young George Carver's inventiveness and hunger for learning compelled him to seek what was impossible for many African Americans of his day: a formal education. Around the age of 11, he left the Carver farm and walked 10 miles to Neosho, Missouri, determined to attend classes at the Lincoln School for Negro Children. He worked for his room and board at the home of Mariah and Andrew Watkins, who lived next door to the school.
The story is that at lunch hour, he would jump the fence between the school and Aunt Mariah's house and go over and help her with her laundry.
Many years later, George was inspired to draw this picture of the school and the Watkins house. George studied hard and got his high school diploma. He applied to Highland College in Kansas and was accepted.
It was a big moment. Then he went to Highland and he showed up and they said, "We didn't know you were black." And they turned him away. It was a huge disappointment.
George didn't give up. In his mid-20s, he applied to Simpson College in Iowa, where blacks were allowed. He was accepted and began taking classes in painting.
His first love was art, and he had a teacher. His name was Etta Budd. She was very dubious about whether a black could make it in art. It was a near impossibility. And she was a little concerned about him being... He was not the first black at Simpson, but he was the only one at the time.
Carver's complex understanding of nature came through in his paintings and drawings at Simpson. Etta Budd noticed this talent and encouraged him to change his course of study to horticulture. Carver took her advice and transferred to the Iowa State College of Agriculture in Ames, where he became the first black student.
He had some trouble with dining room privileges and other things, but he overcame them by his knowledge, which was so conspicuously immense that you didn't have to be in his presence very long to realize that this man knew things.
When Carver completed his bachelor's degree, Iowa State officials offered him a teaching position. The first black student in the college's history was now its first African-American professor. Though Carver was content at Iowa State, in April 1896, he was offered an opportunity that would change his life forever. Booker T. Washington, a leader among the newly freed slave population in the South, invited him to come to Tuskegee Institute, an all-black college in Alabama.
When Booker T. became aware of Carver, that there was an agricultural expert in the country anywhere who was black, that was huge. He was really the only one in the whole country. Booker T. badly wanted someone like that.
At the age of 31, George Washington Carver had found his true calling. He went to Alabama with a mission to help a once enslaved population find its way to self-sufficiency. Little did he know what landmark discoveries lay ahead. One of George Washington Carver's closest friends at Iowa State was James Wilson, who would later become Secretary of Agriculture under President William McKinley. George Washington Carver Tech will return on Modern Marvels. We now return to George Washington Carver Tech on Modern Marvels. Today, 50,000 peanut farms thrive in the United States, most of them in the South. Virtually all of them have taken root in the past century, thanks to the horticulture professor who ventured to Tuskegee with a sense of mission in 1896. When George Washington Carver arrived by rail in Alabama, he saw no peanut fields. Instead, he was dismayed to see only one crop growing in the dry, sandy soil.
1794,
Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin. And from that date on in to 1900, cotton was king.
Carver knew that a single crop system was not good for the soil.
Anytime in agriculture you base your economy on one single crop, you're vulnerable. In a fertility standpoint, you're depleting the soil and maybe not returning all the nutrients there that is taken.
Carver also recognized that the only thing more vulnerable than the nutrient-deficient soil was the multitude of poor black sharecroppers working in the cotton fields from sunrise to sunset.
They were tied into the industrial system in the Northeast, where they had the mills, cotton mills, and it was a big system, and they were all captive in it.
Carver was anxious to get to work to solve the South's agricultural dilemma. But when he arrived at Tuskegee Institute, he discovered that he didn't even have a laboratory in which to work. And Tuskegee had no money to properly establish one.
So he went out into a local junkyard and found old pots and pans and spoons and took his students and said, "We are now collecting the implements for our laboratory." He was the absolute first person to bring science to Tuskegee University.
He was one of those great visionaries that, you know, when Booker T. Washington shows him this campus and there is no agricultural college, there's nothing, you know, he had the ability to take nothing and make it into something. And I think that, you know, his life was a great example of that.
Carver started reaching out to the farmers in the area, showing them how the cotton they grew year after year was sapping the nitrogen and other nutrients from the soil. He encouraged them to plant crops that would restore these important elements back into the land. Crops like sweet potatoes, cowpeas, soybeans, and peanuts.
He was another one who came here because he cared about the man furthest down. He cared about the poor. He cared about African-American people who were poor in the rural areas. And as such, he took his science to the people.
Carver designed and implemented what he called a movable school to educate the farmers about crop rotation. Many took his message to heart, but few acted on his advice.
The farmers agreed, but they did not immediately heed because they could not get loans at the bank for any crop except cotton.
Yeah, it was the cash crop at the time, and a lot of people, that was their source of income, and it would have been very difficult for those farmers, especially the poorer farmers, to change over from cotton to peanuts, and there was no market at the time for peanuts.
Carver's concern for Southern agriculture wasn't restricted to how cotton was bankrupting the soil. Another threat was lurking menacingly on the horizon. The boll weevil, the dreaded insect that had already decimated the cotton crops in Texas, was making its way across the South.
And it was moving through Mississippi, Louisiana, and headed to Alabama and Georgia at the rate of about 100 miles per year. And he warned them.
There was no stopping this devastating force of nature. The weevil actually lays its eggs inside the unripe cotton boll, and the newborns eat their way out, destroying the crop in the process. Carver believed the South's best defense against the boll weevil was the peanut, but he had to convince Southern farmers that peanuts could become the cash crop that King Cotton had been for so long.
George Washington Carver really became an evangelist for peanut growing in the southeast part of the United States.
In 1902, Carver entered his lab at Tuskegee to begin intense research into the peanut. He explored its properties and looked for ways to put the protein and vitamin-rich crop to use. Peanuts are made up of oils, resins, fats, sugars, and starches. And Carver came up with more than 300 new uses for them in recipes and in a variety of synthetic applications.
And he made paper and ink and shoe polish and floor wax and axle grease. And he did have some kind of a peanut plastic that he'd made.
And all of these uses, 300 of them, all the way from various soups to soap and shaving cream. He built the foundation block upon which peanuts were ushered in.
Hans Carver predicted. In 1915, the boll weevil hit the southeastern farms and completely destroyed the cotton fields. None of the farmers from Georgia or Alabama could pay off the loans on their land. But thanks to Carver's zealous advocacy, peanuts were poised to become a viable commercial alternative to cotton.
By 1917, cotton was dethroned and peanuts was lifted up, and the acreage increased in the southeast 400% in just 2 years.
As peanut power spread across the South, Carver continued to experiment with a now lucrative crop. While analyzing the properties of peanut oil, he discovered that it was very easily absorbed when rubbed onto the skin. Carver promoted peanut oil as an effective lubricant to be used in vigorous massage treatments for those suffering from muscular disorders. Thousands of patients, including those crippled by polio, came to Tuskegee to receive peanut oil massages. Even more wrote to Carver to purchase the oil. While it was never considered a cure for any disease, those who underwent the treatment reported encouraging results. Word of Carver's promising work made it all the way to the White House.
One of the extractions that he did with the peanut, one of our presidents, Roosevelt, used it for his infantile paralysis.
In 1942, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt paid an official visit to Tuskegee. He greeted Carver in person and applauded the research being done on the Alabama campus.
I'm proud to come to Tuskegee because I'm proud of what Tuskegee has done.
While Carver has been called the father of the peanut industry, there is one product that many mistakenly attribute to him: peanut butter.
Peanut butter as we know it in America was basically invented in 1890 by a physician in Missouri. And he was looking for high protein, nutritious foods to feed his patients who had trouble eating meat because they had poor dental health. The first real introduction to the masses for peanut butter happened in 1904 at the Universal Exposition in St. Louis. And that's when really peanut butter was introduced to the American public.
And then this complemented and augmented George Washington Carver's research at that time. The two are not unconnected because he had laid the foundation, even though he didn't invent peanut butter. He had laid the foundation for raising up and digging deep into the kernel and chemically telling the world what a wonderful food product peanut was.
His love of peanuts helped to really promote its usage widespread. And I think that, you know, he would be very happy to see how his legacy has really taken shape in modern day America.
We basically take a peanut that George Washington Carver helped develop and build in the field and help it grow to what it is today, to the point that we now buy the peanut, we shell the peanut, and then we offer a service to customers who then further process it.
Carver would no doubt be pleased with the assembly line efficiency of modern peanut processing plants, like Golden Peanut in Dawson, Georgia.
We shell about 25 tons an hour of peanuts. It takes about a truckload an hour to supply this plant.
The peanuts that make the grade are bagged and sent to manufacturers. Those that don't measure up undergo a process that's come a long way since Carver's day.
Broken kernels, damaged kernels, small sizes are then sent to the crushing plant. There we process them for peanut oil and the balance being peanut meal.
When Carver produced peanut oil in his lab more than a century ago, he boiled 25 pounds at a time and then extracted the oil by straining the mixture through cheesecloth. Today, the refineries steam heat the nuts and then put them through a mechanical press to extract most of the oil.
golden peanut, they press 350 tons of peanuts each day. George Washington Carver's work with the peanut in the early 1900s became the foundation for a new science known as chemurgy, the process of discovering industrial uses for agricultural products. Using peanuts, sweet potatoes, soybeans, and other crops, he literally planted the seed for technological innovations that would change the course of farming in the United States. In 1921, Carver was invited to testify at a congressional hearing for a proposed tariff on peanuts. He was allotted 10 minutes, but congressmen were so impressed by Carver's testimony that he was allowed to speak for over an hour and a half. George Washington Carver Tech will return on Modern Marvels. We now return to George Washington Carver Tech on Modern Marvels. George Washington Carver's enduring influence is evident in a diverse array of products that modern consumers use every day. Carpet backing, crayons, oil solvents, and even a new vodka are some of the items that can be traced to his experiments with another soil-enriching and protein-rich crop, the soybean.
We work in plastics, adhesives, in lubricants, so it's really a whole realm of new products from that technology.
Carver learned that the oil from soybeans is composed of 5 fatty acids, and that the bean itself is naturally rich in vitamin E.
You have a bean that has a lot of oil in it and a lot of protein, and it can be crushed and separated, and things can happen to that little bean.
When Carver looked at the soybean under the microscope, he saw that the oil had chemical properties that would allow it to easily bond with other substances.
The soybean oil itself is really long-chained. There's a lot of carbons in a row, 13, 16 carbons. And so that gives it ability to be a very flexible type of oil to be used, and it's also relatively inexpensive as an oil.
Carver's early experiments resulted in food products. Soy mayonnaise was one of his first successes.
He said he started work with the soybean around 1903, and by the time they'd finished that phase of the work, they had about 30 products.
When I go in a supermarket and go along the shelf of health foods, and you see bacon and lunch meat and the mock chicken and all those products that are made out of soy and other vegetable-based products, you just have to think of Carver. I mean, that was a major focus for him.
In his humble lab at Tuskegee, George Washington Carver experimented with a handful of beans, a coffee grinder, and some beakers, and came up with more than 100 new uses for soybeans and soybean oil, including a type of soy plastic. In the 1930s, automotive pioneer Henry Ford became aware of Carver's pioneering research with soybeans. In 1937, he invited him to participate in a scientific conference in Dearborn, Michigan. Ford shared Carver's passion for developing new uses for farm products, and he was a major player in the chemurgy movement.
And he was really taken by the fact that Carver could take soybean, for example, and come up with components of car parts.
You look at a guy like Henry Ford, who had tremendous resources, and he was always looking for the newest and the brightest and looking for other opportunities. And he saw this man, Carver, and he saw him as just a gold mine, a wealth of information and a wealth of creativity, and really wanted to bring him into his organization. And Carver was not drawn by the money, not drawn by the opportunity. He knew that his job was to be there at Tuskegee, to teach, to guide.
Despite his devotion to Tuskegee, Carver continued to personally consult with Ford about his ongoing research in soy plastics. In 1942, the automaker unveiled a car that included a bushel of soy in its construction.
The gear shift knob, the door crank, the handles, the foot pedals, things like that, Mr. Ford had nearly 7,000 acres of soybeans grown right there in that area. He had the research labs right there that he worked in, and he tied that with industry in his plant of building automobiles.
In a rare film from 1943, the Ford Motor Company revealed a car that had some body parts constructed from soy plastic. Ford researchers wanted to demonstrate just how strong and ding-proof this material could be. And Henry Ford himself even took a few whacks.
Henry Ford took a mallet and hit the trunk lid of a Ford car to show the durability of soy plastic. We can do that today with soy plastic made from soybeans.
Carver and Ford's creative partnership is echoed in what the Ford Motor Company calls the U-Car. Built in 2003, this concept car's interior is made entirely from an eco-friendly, recyclable polyester with soy-based seats and tailgate. While the Ford Motor Company carries on Carver's belief in the soybean's potential, so do scientists at Iowa State University, Carver's alma mater. But while Carver worked primarily with the oil from the soybean, they focused on soy flour. They've used the flour to develop a breakthrough formula for producing a new variety of durable plastic. Soybean farmers around the country are well aware of Carver's early research and the potential of using soybeans in commercial products.
Washington Carver discovered years ago that there was this multitude of products that could come out of our natural bioproducts. Soy has been called the miracle bean because it is so usable in so many different ways. And Carver recognized that, and the soybean farmers of the United States have carried it that one step further.
The newspaper industry embraced the soybean in 1987, when soy ink was first used in the printing process. Today, more than 3,000 papers across the country use color inks made from soybeans. From the St. Louis Post-Dispatch to the LA Times, publishers are finding that the soy-based products are just as practical as their petroleum-based counterparts. Construction engineers are discovering the soybean's value as well. A recent example of their work is the new roof atop the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago.
It's non-toxic. It's 100% waterproof. The application of it is very simple, very easy to do, and it will save us energy by reducing...
Hold on. Everybody, this is Jimmy's Underground Radio Network. I didn't mean to cut the Carter G. Woodson movement off, but I was at a meeting. The meeting is over, and we should be right back in about 4 minutes. And 23 seconds so we can get everything crunk again, everybody. Jimmy Underground Radio Network, I'm sorry for the cut in of the Carter G. Woodson story. But I'll be right back. And Dana, I see you holding on, Dana. Dana, I'm just coming in, Dana. Dana, give me a minute, Dana. I'll be right back on. I made my announcement today, and I just left the club. Give me 4 minutes and 21 seconds. I'll be right back there, everybody.
Was a boy
I can't sing no more sad songs.
announcement that I'm running for Congress today. Had a nice little crowd that came out. Thank you all for coming out. Thank you for the marauders that showed themselves in the building. I appreciate you all dearly. But let's end this hour out with what has transpired over the weekend. Over the weekend, we were talking about a lady who had mental illness driving down the street of D.C. Now, we're going to deal with that in a holistic way. Well, maybe not in a holistic way. We're going to just see, is it insanity or is humanity vainglorious, everybody? Should we need to have the aluminum foil caps on our head? Should we turn the TV off because there's strange things coming to us? Or should we pay attention to USA / Somalia? But I don't know. 347-83. Oh, what's up? We got my girl Dana checking in already. Yo, Dana, what's going on? How you doing?
Hey, Jimmy.
What's Hold going on? I don't know when you called in. I was out making my announcement, but I see that you're still on. I hope you weren't holding on too long. But I let the world know that I am running for Congress for the 1st Congressional District, and I appreciate you holding on. But let's get to the topic at hand, Dana. What's going on in America?
Jimmy, I think the first thing we need to know is you're running for what?
I'm running for Congress right now, Dana. I'm trying to unseat, first I'm trying to get the Republican nomination for the office of U.S. Representative in the 1st Congressional District. And then, if I'm so lucky, I might get a chance to go after Bobby Rush and try to unseat him. But right now, I made my announcement that I'm seeking the Republican nomination for GOP, House of United States Representatives, and I made my announcement today, and that's why I'm late. And thank you for all the politicians that came out. Like, wow, I had a lot of Democrats out. Support me. I appreciate that, y'all. I really do. But, Dana, you didn't call here to talk about that. I didn't talk about the crazy people that are driving around D.C. running over people. That's why you called, Dana. Let's keep it real. What's your take on what's going on right now?
Jimmy, I got to tell you, I am, if I curse, I would be saying WTF. What the heck is going on? Get it? WTF? What the heck?
WTH, I'm with you. Go ahead.
Honestly, I have no idea. When I first heard about that young lady, I mean, God rest her soul, I said, you've got to be kidding me. But it wasn't just her. I mean, they had the guy that set himself on fire, and then there was the other guy that was in Oregon that had the shootout with the policeman.
Hold on. Fire. Break it down to me, Dana. What happened? Fire. Explain to me. I missed that. What happened now? When did this happen?
Okay, so the young lady was on Thursday, the one who crashed into the barricade, or attempted to crash into the barricade. I don't know. However it happened, she ended up being shot. Then the very next day, there was a person that set himself on fire. He was a black guy.
On fire. Set on fire.
Jimmy, when I say on fire, I mean they got pictures of him sitting on fire.
Yes.
That same
day. On fire. So let me get straight, Dana. You got somebody setting themselves on fire. You got somebody going to the White House. You got somebody shooting. No, Danny. You got somebody shooting up the malls. Now, is it insanity or is it humanity?
Well, I didn't see the shooting of the malls. I saw this person on the news that was in a shootout with a policeman.
What? Well, a policeman, break it down, Dan. I missed that one.
Okay, so in Oregon, I don't know what happened. You see that one? In Oregon, all I saw was the policeman was attempting to stop this person. Now, of course, we don't know. We never know the backstory, but so I can only give you the news version. But they showed him get out of his car. The policeman stated, "I stopped you for speeding." He comes walking towards the policeman and starts shooting at him. He was in uniform. This guy
and
was
what else
in military, he was in a military uniform. The policeman shot him in the chest, or supposedly he was shot in the chest. I didn't see any blood, but he had three children in the car, according to the news report. And then he drove another half a mile and died in the car. So I believe that the report, although it wasn't released until Friday, but according to the news, it happened, I think it was back in September, August or September. I have no idea.
So what's your take on it? What's your take on it?
That something is happening. I mean, people are losing it. I've never seen anything like this in my entire life, and I'm not a spring chicken.
Do you think, Dana, that it might be homegrown terrorism that might be at play here?
I have no idea, and I'm not equipped to speak. I'm not able to speak on anything like that. All I can say is that something is happening in our world where, I mean, this is just tragic. It's tragic, honestly, to just see these things happen. But even more to know that these are people, these are human beings, and it's sad. You know, it shows that we have a long way to go.
Right.
I don't know why it's happening. I just keep praying for us. I keep praying for our country, and I keep hoping that things will get better at some point.
But listen, now. Understand the guy that set himself on fire in the mall, D.C., he was a foreigner or Somali. Is that true? That information
no,
that you got?
I don't know what his nationality was. I don't know where he was from. I just know he was on fire.
So he's on fire. But what's going on now is that we are having a pseudo attack upon the government. Now you got two things that took place, Dana, in D.C. A lady drive. Okay, let me ask this question, Dana. Do you feel that the force used to subdue the lady was justifiable?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know because I feel that, you know, somebody told me a long time ago, believe half of what you hear and none of what you see. So, I don't know. You never know what happened. You never know why it happened. All we know is the report of what transpired. So, I don't think that it's acceptable to ever take a life. So I can't say one way or the other, honestly.
Yeah, so now let me ask you this question. Now, do you think that hold on, what's happening? You know you're distracting me, right? You know I'm on the air, right? And I'm saying what you're trying to say. You call me mid. Excuse me, people in the audience. My sister called me midstream of thought. But let me go back to the topic of him. That just as recently, America went to Somalia and tried to capture this new, I can't think of a guy's name, they missed out and they got another target. Do you think there is a pseudo war that's going on right now with the Somalian people and American government? I know you're not at liberty to talk about it. Let me change the subject. Do you think it's insanity, or do you think it's an act of war that's going on right now in our country, Dana?
I feel that people, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I've never seen these kinds of things before. And so why it's occurring, I can't really say. That it's occurring, you know, I just feel that these are very strange actions, and I can only hope and pray that eventually we find out what the true story is, because, again, I don't believe everything, you know, that glitters is gold. And because I don't believe everything that glitters is gold, you know, we can't always trust what the report is. So I can only hope that we find out why these things are occurring, so we can get down to the bottom of them. And that's the only way to have a true solution, is to find out what the real cause is.
Yes. Now, what I need to do is have the guy that was on last week who told us that they are zapping individuals through the TV screen and the radio. Do you find any validity in what this guy is saying, or do you just think people, because of the health care bill, people are just off their meds there? What do you think? It's because if we need a health care bill to put people back on their meds, or there's something strange going on in America?
We need a health care bill so we can have health care for Americans. I feel that is very necessary. I agree 100% with the new health care proposal. But do I believe that people are being, controlled by radioactive waves? I don't believe that. Do I believe that we have an overabundance of violence in this society? Yeah, 100%. You look on TV, you see people getting shot up and scary movies, blood and guts are all popping out. So I think that we've glorified violence for way too long. And so, and because of those glorifications, I think that now people have now become, they're numb to all of these things. You know, you hear a real heinous act that occurred, you know, like Trayvon or the baby that was shot in the Inglewood neighborhood of Chicago, you know, and then there's this uproar of, oh, my God, look at what happened. But honestly, there's 1,000 of those that happen that occur on a daily basis. But because they're not, you know, they're not publicized on TV, and that crime, that heinous crime against the human being, is not shown everywhere on the news, then it doesn't matter. So we just have too much violence in this society, and it's got to get under control.
Well, is it violence, Dana, or
my opinion? But that's my opinion, of course.
Is it violence or is it mental illness? Which one do you think it is?
Well, everybody can't be mentally ill. Everybody can't be mentally ill, but, you know, you've got video games. What do they have? What is the video game where people pick up prostitutes and they drive down the street and they shoot people and, you know,
there's
cars on the video games?
Grand Theft Auto, Dana, and I'm telling you this. I play Grand Theft Auto, and first, I couldn't stand it. But let me tell you, Grand Theft Auto is very, very. Listen, if you want to have it, pick up weed. Don't pick up Grand Theft Auto, because you will be on top of a roof trying to scoop out. I mean, the game is very. Well, when they say parental discretion is advised, they mean that seriously. Parental discretion should be advised.
Well, see, and I don't know about, I've never played the game before. I've never even seen the game before. But I've just heard people talk about it. I mean, why would it be necessary for youngsters to drive around picking up prostitutes in a video game or stealing cars, stealing planes? There's one game where you could steal a plane, you could shoot rockets, you run people over, you beat them up. All these things are violent. These are all violent acts. Yeah, it may be a little cartoon character, but eventually, if you shoot enough people, guess what? You feel stronger than strong. If you watch that guy, if you watch that guy who was in the shootout with the policeman, he moved his arm over his shoulder like he was reloading. You know how, like, if you play the little mall video games where you're shooting and you move your hand over to the side to reload in the air? He looked like he was air reloading.
Yes.
But the difference is, if he was not on the video game, he was in real life. So I think that we just become numb to all the violence in our society. And it's sad. I mean, it's sad. Kids can't walk down the street and you don't have to not worry about them. You got to worry about kids now. They can't go out and play. We wonder about child obesity. Well, the first thing we need to look at is kids cannot walk down the street and play. They can't go out in front of their houses. We got to worry about child molesters. We got to worry about kidnappers. We got to worry about violence. We got to worry. It's too much. So it's easier to set them down in the house in front of a cartoon and give them a cheeseburger. But that's contributing to the heart attack.
Right. That is contributing to the heart attack. But, Dan, do you think there's a correlation between what took place on the mall and what is going on with the girl? Do you think they were simultaneously, or they're just coincidence? What's your take on that?
I don't believe in coincidence, first of all. I mean, you know, eventually if too many things happen to me at the same time, I say, hey, that wasn't a coincidence. That was on purpose. But I find it to be extremely strange that you would have these two acts of violence within a matter of days of one another. And then there was another thing reported today. There's something going on. What it is, I don't know. Why it is, I don't know. That it is, if you just pay attention, you can see it. There's something happening. And I can only hope that whatever it is, like I said, we get to the bottom of it. Because that's what really needs to happen. We got to find out what is the root to all of this badness. And the report on the badness doesn't give us any true information, if that makes any sense at all.
No. It does make a lot of sense. It does make a whole lot of sense.
The other thing is that I find it strange that all these things that are being reported are by African Americans. You got, if you look historically, how many African Americans commit acts like this? Very rare. Now, all of a sudden, in a matter of days, it just keeps on coming up. Is something going on? And so we got to figure out, honestly, they need to get to whatever it is that's causing it.
Do you think the MK Ultra mind control that is zapping all these blacks to just torch themselves and drive up to the White House and just start shooting people? I mean, everybody, the girl said this, that she thought Obama was stalking her. You know, the other guy said, I've been hearing voices. Can we say that these things are true? Or could we say
the thing about it is, it's schizophrenia. So people that hear voices, I guess they would be deemed as schizophrenic in the mental health world. So schizophrenia is a condition that's been around for years and years and years and years. and these kinds of things. So that kind, that illness has been around for a long time. These occurrences are new. So to just give a blanket account for everything that's happening or everything that's transpiring and say, oh, yeah, it's mental illness and they are hearing voices. Well, why didn't all this stuff come up before the heinous act? And why is it all of a sudden that everybody is committing these terrible crimes, all of them are hearing voices? That don't sound right.
So if that's the, Dan, I'm being funny again. If that's the true, telling point, then was my man right by saying that we need to have tinfoil hats to prevent these people talking to us and the way they talk to us?
Well, all I know is if somebody got a tinfoil hat on and I need to bake something, I'm taking that foil off that hat.
But maybe if the dude said it's preventing people from telling me to go kill someone, or someone's following me, or someone's after me, the government is after me. I mean, let's be honest, Dana. We've heard stories like this, comedy stories, movies, they out to get me, they're following me, what have you. Now, I'm not saying I condone or I agree or I have any knowledge. What I'm saying is this, Dana. They be telling the truth.
Well, why now? Why now? Why all of a sudden are these things happening?
But, Dana, let's look at this. Let's look at the 60s for a second. So, let's look at the 60s or the late 60s, early 70s. There were people on college campus getting bell towers shooting people. There were people like Helter Skelter. The masks were going in, they're chopping up babies and doing things like that. I mean, each era almost has.
You may hear about it. You may hear, but those are rare occasions. Where
I'm going on decades.
We're talking about the things that we're talking about was on Thursday with the woman, on Friday with the man, then on Friday with the policeman thing. And then today, here comes another report about these guys that did this to this soldier. It's a lot. And one thing that they all have in common is that they're African-American. So why would you have a culture that statistically, historically, would rarely commit crimes like this, and now it's happening on a daily basis, almost. Take a break on Saturday and Sunday, come right back again on Monday.
Well, they would say that the D.C. sniper, was he an anomaly or was he just the beginning?
But even if he was, either way, he would have been, when you heard about him, you heard about him. You didn't hear about him on Thursday, then somebody else on Friday, then somebody else on Monday, then somebody else 2 weeks before that. You know what I'm saying? It's just too often. Yes, I agree that there is badness that occurs in this world, and I do agree that that periodically you will have these bad things reported, but it's just happening too often. So the frequency is what's abnormal. And then the influx or the increase in violence, that is abnormal, especially when you're talking about one particular group. So that's my own opinion. But, again, whatever it is that's just transpiring, that's causing all this, I can only pray that it gets under control, because I don't want to keep reading about people dying and their kids are in the car and their kids are in danger because of the parents. You know what I mean?
I don't want to take
our society.
Dana, come on. One at now. I'm not trying to be xenophobic or trying to be racist or prejudiced here, people. But when, then, have you heard, of a black woman taking her kid on a suicide mission?
Never.
Never. Period. They'll leave the baby on the side of the road and go take care of themselves or drop them maybe off. I mean, never. But then again, was this person American?
I don't know.
She's Somali. And now you know we're at war with Somali right now. I'm not trying to speak on anything right now, but that is what's going on. Matter of fact, I got another caller calling in. Oh, this is my man, Sean. What's going on, Sean? Let me bring you in right now. Hey, man, it's a half an hour. What's your take on what's going on? What's your take on what's going on with these? Man, what's going on?
Which one?
Dana, give me your list of Dana what transpired, and then I'm see what Sean can help me out with. Let's go, Dana, from the man burn themselves up to the shootout to drive-by. Dana, give me a blow-by-blow, step-by-step.
We had several things happen. We had the young lady on the mall, and then there was the guy who set himself on fire. Then there was the shootout with the Oregon policeman. Have you heard about those things?
Yeah, I mean, I heard about the shootout. And I heard something about a guy setting himself on fire. I know it was black. I didn't pay attention to the news. When he do that?
Are you talking about all these things came out on Friday, Thursday and Friday? Every one of those stories came out on Thursday and Friday. And so I'm saying that it's just a strange thing that all these African crimes by African Americans, you know, these are just crimes that are just not characteristic of African Americans.
Right.
They got pictures. If you look up pictures of the guy on fire, they got pictures of this man sitting in fire. Literally. And so to me, these kinds of things, you know, everybody can't be schizophrenic. Everybody can't be hearing voices. And then this happened within 2 weeks of what happened at the Navy Yard, you know. It's just a lot.
Yeah, now with the other people, you know, with the black guy going off and shooting and the guy setting himself on fire, that takes
a lot. And then the black lady driving in D.C. What's going on, Sean?
Well, I wanted to say, you know, she could have been warning the president. I don't know, because that didn't make no sense.
Sean.
They shot her 9 times. They shot her 9 times. You could see she came up to the gate. Stop.
Sean, what I saw was they not trying to shoot her, but Sean, when would a black woman take their baby on a crazy joy ride like she did? I mean, Sean, what I saw. John, do you think the shooting of that lady was unjustifiable?
Yeah, I think it was unjustifiable.
Why do you say that?
I mean, I only seen a little bit of how did they stop her?
With the bullet.
Let me tell you what happened. No. There were several times where all the police officers got around the car to say, stop, lady. She ran a couple of guys over, man. Now, out of Secret Service.
She ran a couple guys over. No, she didn't bump. She barely bumped somebody, they said.
Oh, no. You need to see the tape, man. No. Hey, Dana. Now, Dana, you're a female. I know you got probably.
Here's my question.
Hey, Dana, ask a question. Let me ask your opinion. Was that lady driving like she about to tip him up, Dana? And did you hear that she ran? Did you see her run somebody over?
You know what? Here's my take on it. Where did she get those kind of driving skills from?
Who is she?
She
has skills. Now, Sean, they had her surrounded like, lady, we don't want to shoot you. Lady, we don't want to shoot you. Man, she do some quote-unquote racer, Mark 5 sitting like I will and just jit. I mean, she did some she did some racer wreck shit, man. But the service member, man, she's coming for the White House. You don't know if that car loaded, Sean, this lady have a weapon. If that was a white person doing that, everybody would say they tried to let Obama get killed.
It was a white guy shooting on the hot White House lawn the other week.
Did they get him?
Yeah,
they didn't shoot him.
They talked with him. He had a gun.
Interesting. So you think? So that's
yeah.
Hey, Sean. You think shooting the tires would have stopped that lady from driving?
Yeah, they did that. But I'm gonna say this. Hold it. Now, the question is, why was there a 35 to 45 second disconnect between the police officers and the White House? When that occurred.
Listen,
what do you mean by that?
I mean, with the police, some pertaining to the.
We can argue conspiracy theories, but check this out, my man.
No. Hold it. Look at it like this. I'm gonna tell the Navy boy shooting in. All right, check this out. He works for a group called the Expert. Look them up. Look up who the Expert is. They sort of look like a CIA front, for real. Straight up.
What are you saying? I don't understand what you're trying to say. I'm just saying,
I'm looking at the group that the black boy was working for, right? They connected with the UN, they subcontracted with the UN. It's not a real group. It looks like some type of fun. It don't go into depth on what they do. When you look at their website, look at it. It don't go into depth or nothing. I'm just saying. If that girl, how do we know that girl didn't know something? She was trying to warn Obama. She didn't trust nobody at the gate.
Maybe she ain't gonna take her baby with her.
Hold it. That would make a lot of sense.
She's not gonna be when police officers shout.
Listen, the question was, her family, did you hear what her family said?
I missed that. Elaborate.
Okay, that's not like her. It's like her sister's a police sergeant. They want to know why the police opened fire. There was no reason for that.
I'll go again. From what I saw, we can go 35 seconds, 5, 10, a cell phone bill,
no,
what have you.
Look it up. Don't make this. This is the White House, man. They supposed to have top-notch interconnected security all over. Everybody supposed to be connected, and you telling me all of a sudden.
Before I said this, cops surround the lady car before she was even shot, before she was fired. Surround the car like, get out the car. Get out the car. I see you going to erase your ex. Hey, you can't stop me, niggas. Out the door movement. Now, my mind, as a black man, one thing, if cops got me surrounded in a vehicle and I bag out to get on my way, I'm out the door, some getting shot. I know it's life or death now, and I've got to go because they're coming for me. There's no way, if you're not guilty, not in no wrong, Sean. Listen, I'm not on the side of the shooter. The baby, but Sean, they had a car surrounded at gunpoint. She should have got out of the car. She had a baby in the car.
Here's my question to you. No, here's my question to you, then. You're right. The car
had a baby in the car, and the car surrounded. Thinking about your child right now, lady, and she was not.
But Jimmy.
Wait a minute. If she thinks her life is in danger, they had the car surrounded.
It was like, what, about 8 or 9 people around her? How'd she get that car out of there? How'd she make a 3-point turn like that and get that car up out of there? Then the shot that killed her was a bullet to the head.
She got shot 9 times, six times or 9 times.
And baby
That's
didn't get
overkill.
Injured?
Huh?
And baby wasn't injured?
No. That's what I'm saying. It don't add up. Stuff don't add up. You got the White House security, communications go down for 45 seconds. Communications go down for 45 seconds, 35 to 45 seconds, all while this is taking place. I'm saying, then I'm looking at it from a point of view. If you look at the video again, like she's trying to warn somebody. She don't trust nobody at the front gate, and all of a sudden, telecommunication.
What do you mean? What do you mean it went down for 45 seconds?
35. Read up on the thing. The telecommunications or something at the White House went down. Security communications went down for 35 to 45 seconds. They could not communicate.
But listen, I'm saying this. Listen. Check it out.
And then she ends up dead.
But listen, listen.
Did she know something? Try, you know, she didn't trust nobody. I don't know.
No,
she was in that position. Hold it.
Yes. All those Somalians up in Minnesota better be on guard right now. That's all I'm saying.
No. We just did an act of war, invaded a country illegally, and going to act like we did something good.
I'm going to go here. When the truth come out about your boy in D.C. with that CIA, whatever one go conspiracy theory, when the truth come out that he was Somalian descent, we'll see what's going on. When the truth come out about that dude who set himself on fire, Somalian, we're going to see what's going on. Let me tell you right now, they're holding the American, you want to go conspiracy theory? They're not even relinquishing that the fact that chick was Somalian out to the public right now. They're not even going to tell you that.
Our sisters look American like mugs. They sound
American.
They probably is.
Sean.
But you know what? You're right. You're probably American. You're right. Right. And you got a point.
How long have
they
been
here,
Sean? How long have they been here, Sean? How long have those Somalians been in Minnesota?
Right.
How long have they been there? You know what I mean? Listen, they got Somalians been here over your daddy's age. You know where I'm coming from? Now, think about Sean. Look at you. You're a childbearing age. You about my same age. My son is about 25 years old. You know where I'm coming from? Ain't 25, but he's down to 25. I mean, shit. Now, if you're a Somalian your grandson, y'all still screaming Somalia. Y'all still screaming the homeland, motherland, what's up, that's how we roll with it. And those are the people right now that are doing this shit right now to Obama. We looking at, they're not Americans. Let me tell you something. American woman, insane or not insane, will not put a child in a fucking car. An American Negro will not set herself on fire.
But she had no weapon.
The car is a weapon, man. The car is a weapon. The car, no, Sean. The car, Sean. Car is a weapon, Sean. Sean, I watched the tape, Sean.
Wait a minute, Sean. The car is a weapon, Jimmy. Did she ram something with the car?
Listen, my heart cries out for the child's mother. My heart cries out for the family. My heart cries out for that black woman who got shot the fuck down. It pains me, Sean. I'm not even fronting. It pains me. But I know right here that if I am on duty as a Secret Service, police officer, and someone's coming to my target, gunning for me, I have to do what's necessary.
She politely bagged out.
No, hold on.
Someone. Wait a minute. She
politely
bagged
out when surrounded by police officers. No, listen. In this country, Sean.
Wait a minute. Why was she surrounded?
She's driving erratically down Constitution Avenue, and we had to check this lady because she's driving erratically, going past the speed limit, going over all these barricades and bumpers. We got to see what's going on.
Okay.
Let's have it like this.
Okay. All right. Do you think she was trying to warn Obama?
Hey, Sean.
Do you think she was trying to warn Obama?
Hey, Sean, how about this? If she got taken alive, then she'd had a chance to warn Obama. She would have had a chance. They had the car surrounded, Sean, at gunpoint. Get out the car. You are a black man. Hey, Sean, if cops surround you with their guns pointed at you, get out the car. What would you do, Sean? Get out the car or do what old girl do? And if you did what old girl do, you are expecting to get shot, Sean. That's reality. That's reality.
Yeah. Jimmy,
yeah.
Okay.
Was she driving like an average, not a Mario Andretti citizen?
What I'm saying is this, no. As a black American, in our DNA, as a descendant of an American slave,
you had a white man run up on the White House lawn shooting, I believe.
I didn't hear about that.
I thought he had a gun or something.
All I know is this.
He shot something.
I'm not tripping on you. I'm looking at it because I want to put you out there, like, you know, because, you know, I'm glad you called my show and stuff like that, provide information. But I'm going to go here. They have the car surrounded, front, back, side to side, guns out. Any black American, any descendant of slave, anybody know that I either, A, I'm getting out because, A, I be got no weapon. I be got no weapon, and you ain't going to pop me like this. But if I know this, if I turn out, I'm riding and I'm dying because it's going down in a blaze of glory, and I know this already. My sad part about it is this. You had a baby in the car with cops around you, gun blazing. You're not even thinking of, I'm going again. You had your car surrounded with cops out. You got a baby in the car. I'm going to say it again. You're stopped. Cars surrounded by cops with guns out. Are you going to take a chance of somebody's trigger having shooting your baby? You get out the car. You're surrendering because your child is in that car. You're surrendering. But unless you're on a suicide mission, you're on a suicide mission where fuck the world, then you're going out like...
Or your medication done ran out and you're going through withdrawal and you don't know what you're doing.
No,
because she was on psych meds.
So
everybody on this thing was on psych meds.
Well,
I can't believe it. Everybody, I mean, we got thousands, hundreds of thousands of people taking psych meds on a daily basis. And
like I said, all you got to do is take some for yourself and then stop taking them abruptly and see what happens.
So let me get it straight. They put you on this medication. So if you get off, you'll go drive down the White House lawn, crash people, set yourself on fire, have a shootout with the cops, and then go into a D.C. spot, blowing people up. Or, in fact, go into a Colorado movie theater or go into a schoolhouse because you're playing Grand Theft Auto because I got took off my meds one time. But, Sean... Do we need to start wearing a little four hats? Let me know.
Hey. Go ahead. Go ahead. Take a few pills then, Jimmy, and call me back.
No. What I'm saying is this.
People are saying
that hearing voices. Some gentleman called my show a couple of weeks ago saying that secret is get aluminum. You should wear aluminum hat then. Get off the meds, get your aluminum cap, and call it a day.
He didn't say put the hat on.
No, but Sean, I agree with you. Sean, no. I may make light of it, and please forgive me, people. But I do believe, Sean, I do believe you. In all sincerity, I'm not being facetious or cynical, you see. But now, I'm not going to equate that lady or that dude who burned himself or the shootout or the dude in the D.C. I'm not going to blame them on medication. I'm not. I'm going to blame them as being... See, this is why you don't need the immigration bill. So you look at the immigration bill, you think of straight essays.
So where's your proof they all Somalia? Who you been talking to?
Let me tell you something. Here's the sad part of the deal. Emmy get angry over it. Emmy called me. I said, here's the truth. Now, when it first went out, go any press release, go any news media, what have you, they cut it real short. Just asking the man a question. And they said, it's true that she was Somalia didn't send no further questions. You walked away. They asked me, it's true she's Somalian. We're not gonna identify the nationality of the body. And she said, "My reported declared her being dead. But they said she died or passed away. The question of her being Somalian was thrown out there by the press media and the police officers and the investigative reporters We're not giving.
Okay, what are we doing in Somalia? Well, who we hurting in Somalia? We killing somebody. If they doing this to get attention, we doing something to some people in Somalia. We doing something. We doing something to people in Somalia.
A minute ago, we just went over there and pulled a gap with somebody. We caught one person with Mr. Headman. I forgot his name, but it's like Al Qaeda over there in Somalia, Al Qaeda in Yemen.
Al Qaeda, nothing, man. They'll say people hanging together like a family is Al Qaeda, man. You can't believe that shit. You can't believe that, man. You can't believe that they hanging together like they family and relative. They saying because they
let me go
here. No, man.
Let me go Negro for you one time, Sean. Let me ask you one question. What nationality was the first kill you can credit that Obama did? Who was it and what was it? I'll give his profession, and you give his nationality. His profession was a pirate. What's his nationality?
Somali.
Hello? Somali, right, okay. Day one. Coming to do, right? Coming to do. Day one. Day one. Day one.
Right. We dumping something in the water over there, because I know that's why the pirates was
I know.
Was,
all I know is day one, Sean. Obama the beef was one.
Okay,
we go all on that, but I just ask you a question. And the answer question is from day one. I tell you profession, you'll tell me the nationality, pirate Somalia, Obama something nigga day one in church, Easter Sunday, pop his ass,
yeah.
Obama.
Yeah,
see, people
forgot.
Ain't
that where we dumping the nuclear waste at, over in Somalia water?
In Yucca Mountain. It's over there in Yucca Mountain. But point again, we over there in Mogadishu right now. We dropping bombs in Yemen right now. Those are Somalians over there, homie. Right now, in that mall over in Kenya, are Somalians taking shots right now. See,
and those Somalians are the real Jews. Those are the real Jews. They want to get rid of them. That what you're saying?
No, Ethiopians, homie. Wrong country.
They all look alike. We talking about tribes here, man. We talking about fuck the white man title. We talking about tribe lookalike people. They look like.
I mean, you can say Puerto Rican, I can say Mexican, they all look alike. You can say Taiwanese, I can say South Korean, they all look alike. You say Cleveland, I say Shaker. They all look alike. What the hell? I mean, damn. The point I'm saying is this. That we are at a secret war with Somalia, and we're forgetting it because our mind times are so limited and so small. They are here because we're dropping bombs over there. Now, if this is Bill Clinton, we'll call the white man killing niggas over there. If this is George Bush, we say the white man killing niggas over there. If it's any other white president, we'll say, get back, you're killing niggas. But it's Barack Obama. He gets the pass. That's why when Condi come, she gets the pass. That's why if it ain't Condi Herman, because it's all about Africa. It's all about Africa. Now, these Somalians over here, they're the ones doing it, prepping the stage. My fear is this, because there's so many little Somali-looking niggas running around the hood. Now we've been profiled. We've been profiled just like those little white boys, a.k.a. the Boston Bombers now. You know, now be prepared for all your liberties. That's why you need to vote Republican right now, because as a Democratic president, your liberties are not.
Oh, my goodness, man. Come on, man. Go liberal, man. Don't go with that shit. Uncle Tom, you want to go? Hey, you want to represent the niggas from the 18th century?
I'm going again. All I'm saying is this: look what's going on. You ain't safe no more. All your information is going out there in the democratic world, man. That's how we do it, homie. Your freedom of liberty is gone right now.
Why should we vote? They knocked down Herman Cain's ideas. Why should we go vote for them?
Listen, well,
it has no future. It has no future for us. Period.
Let's go here. A black man as a Republican was the only man during that election over Obama who had a plan for America. that if what, I'm saying
what,
is this.
And what the Republican Party do? They stole his idea and came up on stage like they invented the tax ideas.
I'm going to go ahead now.
Same thing to that nigga. Like they've been doing, they steal our inventions. Wait a minute, they steal our inventions, then pat, and then they steal our ideas, then run with it. Just like they did with his ideas in his face. Okay, so never mind with the vote for the Republicans. They ain't got no good for us.
Read to this. If Herman Cain was a nominee, he would have beat Barack Obama?
No, he wouldn't. He wasn't smart enough. He couldn't even beat the white boy.
Hillary Clinton, Condi Rice, who you fucking with?
Let's get back to what happened on this weekend, man. You're right. It's a lot of course, and if they all Somalian, they probably is. That make a lot of sense. We doing some shit over there.
The secret war is going on in Mogadishu. We in Yemen. We dropping bombs. I mean, we capturing pirates. Matter of fact, there's a movie coming out right now with Tom Hanks. What's it called? Captain Bob, whatever. What's that about? Somalian pirates. What the hell? It's all right in your face.
Right.
I mean,
right.
But we're not looking at the big deal. You know what I'm saying? We're going this and that and other. But if the white man was the president, you would trip on it. But the black man, Obama should be getting shitted on right now because he's bringing it right now. We might not have no Twin Towers going down, but we got crazy-ass niggas popping off in malls, shitting themselves on fire, running motherfuckers down, having shootout with cops. We got right there right now.
Okay.
Because
so,
they be infiltrated
up. So basically, America has nothing for the black people, period.
I'm saying
you
is this.
You can't be Republican or Democrat.
Is that niggas sit there and watch the Somalians buy all the hotels up and sit there in little areas plotting and scheming.
I don't see no white people speaking up for us.
Hold on.
I don't see no white Republicans speaking
up for you.
Hey, black folks.
You hear what I'm saying?
Why, listen, you should stop trying to promote their race, because they're not trying to promote yours, period.
Neither are the Democratic Party now.
You look kind of funny begging, falling down to your knees, begging someone to,
welfare.
Speaking of their approval, you want their approval. And
for Medicare, for government, I don't need an approval. See, it's like this. Listen, there's a movie called Uncle Tom's Cabin. I want you to get it. It's on DVD. Everybody get it. Now, and Uncle Tom's Cabin.
I'm on Jimmy's Underground Railroad.
Right, listen. It's called Uncle Tom's Cabin. Listen, get the movie. Uncle Tom's Cabin, there was a slave. And the slave said, look at that free man over there. Dumbass fool. He got to pay taxes, get all this shit, buy property. Me, master take care of me. He give me housing, clothing. He take care of me. I ain't got to beg for shit. Look at him. He got to beg the man for low taxes. I'm a slave all my life. That's why I'm a Republican. 90 seconds, Dan, to give it to me real fast.
Okay. Well, why don't you read up on Nat Turner? That's a real black American hero. He was a liberal.
Okay, we'll deal with Nat Turner.
Yeah, he was a liberal. That's right.
Deal with Nat Turner, too, because I have my name in school right there. Nat Turner ain't tripping on that. Dana, 60 seconds. Give me outro, Dana.
All I got to tell you is that I'm going to keep on praying for our society and praying for this world, because there's just too much badness, and it's got to get under control. I don't want to live in a society where people have to fear one another, or where people can be judged by the color of their skin, not the content of their character.
So I
only hope that it gets better for us one day.
All right, this is Jimmy Underground Radio Network. I'm sorry I ran late. I had this live little event. Thank you, Sawyer, all the men coming out, Democrat, supporting Republican. Thank you, all the Martin Luther King Republicans coming out. Thank you for Prison Lounge hosting me right now. Jimmy Lee, the D.C., is going down, and we're going to show you how we do it, and it's how we do it. And we're going to show you, Sean, about the new Niagara movement. Get with it, get on it, good night, and may your God be with you, everybody.